top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We are ready to go here. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show, fresh off. I tell you what, I don't think it slows down one day. I watched all the Sunday shows back, and I just can't believe how intense things are. And we're even before talking about 2024, just about the campus chaos, as well as the Israelis moving in on Rafah. And I say thank goodness, because they can't wait anymore. Also, it's a big day for the radio show. We're all coming up on our 14th anniversary, and today we're adding KLIF to the Brian Kilmeade Show family. Huge station over in Dallas. They're the news and information, 570 KLIF and 96.3 FM, and 96.3 FM HD2. And this hour, we're going to be joined by Marco Rubio, fresh off a visit to Mar-a-Lago, along with Governor Kristi Noem, the third governor of South Dakota, author of a brand new book out tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow.
Yep. No Going Back, the truth on what's wrong with politics and how we move forward and how we move America forward. And Governor, you know that you're a prime target on the left. Here's a little of some of the questions. You want to put your headset on?
I got them on.
Oh, you got them on?
Oh, I got them on.
Nice.
Yep.
You want the clip-ons like
Nick. Perfect.
Mick.
I do.
There's some of your questions yesterday on Face the Nation.
Sure.
You talk about meeting some world leaders and one specific one. Quote, I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. I've been a children's pastor, after all. Did you meet Kim Jong-un?
Well, you know, as soon as this was brought to my attention, I certainly made some changes and looked at this passage, and I've met with many, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world as soon as it was brought to my attention.
Right, but
so
you never went to North
no
Korea.
I make no specifics in this book. I talk about the fact that, yes, I have.
I know you read
I'm
this
sorry.
Book
I'm...
before it was published, because you released video of your recording of the audio book. You didn't catch these errors when you were recording it?
Oh, Margaret, as soon as it was brought to my attention, I took action.
But I'm asking you about your book. Here, which we have.
I'm just asking for why.
So
why am I being treated differently than every other person that you've interviewed?
Of the interview.
Right, right.
So great to see you, Governor.
Yeah, good to see you, too.
Are you surprised at how she went after you, or did you kind of glad to get this out?
Well, Margaret treated me very different than she does anybody else that she interviews. In that interview, she interrupted me 36 times
right.
in that interview. And I brought that to her attention, that I had watched dozens of her interviews before. She didn't treat anybody else that way. It was definitely an attack, and that's fine. I'm used to that. If you guys remember, I've kind of been through the fire before. During COVID, nobody had my back when I made the decisions I made in South Dakota, keeping my state open, not mandating anything, not mandating masks right. or vaccines. So I'm used to the attacks. I gave her my answer. She didn't like my answer, so she kept trying to bully me into saying something different. But the truth is the truth.
So you were at Mar-a-Lago of the weekend. I want to get to that. But just on your book, the two things everybody's talking about, they're not the excerpt you released. It's what people have discovered.
Right.
So you grew up on a ranch in a rural setting. Not many people like me did, suburban area.
Right.
So you were trying to describe the difference in lifestyle. And one thing you talk about is your 14-month-old dog you put down. You shot your dog.
It was an adult working dog that was killing livestock and attacking people. And it was 20 years ago. And the reason it's in the book, Brian, is because people, I think, are frustrated with politicians who try to hide the truth and run away from hard decisions. And that's the reason for telling that story, is my political opponents in South Dakota have tried to use this story against me in my last two elections. I mean, that's well known in South Dakota.
So that's what you put in the book, because it's come up.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yes, it's come up. Democrats have tried to use it to make me look like I'm somebody who doesn't.
Like the Mitt Romney story.
Absolutely. And I wanted the truth out. I wanted the truth in the book, that the fact that this was a dog that was attacking people. I was a dog trainer. I was the second home for this dog. It had not worked out where it had been before because it was too aggressive. They gave it to me because I raised dogs. I trained them. I knew how to work with them. We had trained that dog for months, and it still was attacking people and killing livestock. And I also want people to understand that this story is in the book because it's painful. It's hard.
Right.
But I don't run away from my responsibilities.
But do you wish you just gave it to a shelter? Like, when some people just can't
afford it. I don't know if a shelter that would have taken 20 years ago to have taken a dog where you say, this dog is killing livestock and all other animals and will attack people. That shelter, you know, at that time, who knows that answer? And 50 states have laws that say this is a proper way to handle an animal like this.
Right.
And the American Veterinary Association says this is a humane way to handle a dog with this situation.
Governor, you're going to adjust something after the first printing, mm-hmm. right?
Well, I'm going to adjust. There's some content in some world leader meetings
Kim Jong-un.
that I've asked to have taken out. I've had meetings all over the world with many world leaders. And I've asked the publisher to remove that name, and they've agreed to do that in future printings. And
okay.
In fact, I think we're soon going to the second printing already. The book is selling very, very well.
Right. When you did the book on tape, did you mm-hmm. catch it?
Uh-huh. When I did the book on tape, what I needed to do is ask them to take it out, take that name out. And they have done that.
Okay.
So
but you picked it up when you did the book on tape?
Yeah. When it was brought to my attention after that was done.
Okay, yep. And so you were in North Korea.
I have been to North Korea, been to the DMZ, and we were in the facility that crosses into North Korea. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so that
there's
was
just there's. I will not talk about the meetings that I have with world leaders.
Right.
I will not, and I know a lot of people are trying to get me to do that. And this name should not have been in that content, and that anecdote shouldn't have been in there. And I've asked them to take it out.
So when you put this book together, what mm-hmm. do you want people to take from it?
I want the American citizen to know that they're still the number one way to change politics is them showing up. This is like a how-to guide for the American citizen on how mm-hmm. to take their government back.
Because you never thought you were going to get into politics, right?
No. You know, I'm a farmer and a rancher and spent my life in business. I ran for Congress because people asked me to. But I don't think the average person knows that them showing up at a meeting, them making a phone call, them doing an email and not quitting really does move the needle. It does make a difference. I talk about the corruption in politics in this book, mm-hmm. about how money is a huge factor, how consultants are in this to get rich, and how people can really have an impact in a way that goes around all that corruption, and why Donald Trump broke politics. I mean, he did. And you listen to people say they want to go back to the good old days of doing politics the way before it was when Donald Trump showed up on the scene. And I think that's just wrong. I'm glad he broke politics. Politicians don't have to be perfect anymore. They don't have to stand up and pretend to be something that they're not. He has changed the game in that he's real. He's who he is. And that is something that has freed up a lot of us to be who we are. Never say that we're perfect and we don't make mistakes and don't make hard decisions, but that we need leaders who know how to make decisions and
right.
are willing to do the hard things because this country needs it.
You went to Mar-a-Lago over the weekend.
I did.
But yeah. You didn't stay at night.
I didn't stay for the evening. No, I have a brand new granddaughter that was just born. So I have, this is my third. So I went home to South Dakota to squeeze her a little bit.
And then did Face the Nation
yeah,
right after.
Yeah. Yes, I right. did that from okay. Watertown, South Dakota.
So there was nothing, there's no reason, that's the only reason you didn't go at night.
Well, I was there for the lunch. I was there that morning, did a panel with Governor Doug Burgum. We All talked right. about our states and energy policy. We talked about COVID policy and Title IX and all the other challenges we're facing. A little bit of these college protests. So we had great discussion with all of those donors. I was a part of the afternoon and all that, but then I decided to fly home to see my granddaughter.
So I thought this would be interesting. Among the people with these protests that thinks this is a huge deal is Bernie Sanders. Here's what Bernie Sanders said about what the way the president's handling these protests, how it could affect him. Cut 34.
I am thinking back, and other people are making this reference, that this may be Biden's Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I worry very much that President Biden is putting himself in a position where he has alienated not just young people, but a lot of the Democratic base in terms of his views on Israel and this war.
Because he's splitting the difference. He's saying, I'm against all hate, but I understand what the Palestinian people want. But at the same time, you got to be orderly, but you should demonstrate, but just don't wreck anything. And you know exactly where Republicans stand. Yeah. Speaker showed up. He said, yeah. You better just break this up and rip it down. And the president said, don't call the National Guard, but if you want to call the cops, call the cops. So he's alienating everyone.
Yeah, by walking a line, trying to be political instead of really dealing with the crisis situation we have in our hands. I was looking at some of these college campus protests, and now they're canceling their graduation ceremonies.
Just
these
moments
the
ago,
same...
Columbia canceled
I
theirs.
I saw that, and I'm thinking about those poor students who spent all that money to go to college that can't even be safe at their own graduation. These are probably the same kids that didn't get their high school graduations
yep.
because of COVID. So they've been cheated out of everything because we have a president that's too weak to stand up and defend our allies. And, you know, to be honest with you, I think that what is interesting to me about all of this is that They're so wishy-washy, and they're doing it based on polling they think they need to do have in Michigan and Wisconsin. They're looking at the population of those swing states
right.
that they want to win, and they think that there's such a Muslim population in Michigan and Wisconsin that Biden knows he has to win those two states, and he doesn't want to alienate that demographic.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. I'm sure you've read the news that he has cut off new ammo shipments over mm-hmm. to Israel. Mm-hmm. Israel says, we'll stand alone if we have to. Mm-hmm. And then Hamas, of all people, walk away from negotiations.
Yes. Yeah.
And now a corridor is being opened up to allow Palestinians to get out. You're on armed services, right?
I was.
So
yep.
you know
absolutely.
This is going to be very difficult. Mm-hmm. But the Prime Minister Netanyahu says there's no way we're not going in. That operation's yeah. happening now. How does this play out?
I admire him because he is a man who is showing compassion to those innocent civilians caught in the crossfire. But he is going to make sure that there are consequences for what Hamas has done. Hamas is an organization that needs to be exterminated. And what I believe that Netanyahu is doing is keeping his word. And that's the one thing that we need politicians to do. We have the White House just admitted the other day that President Biden has lied 148 times just this year and has never gone back and said, you know what? I misspoke. I said I was wrong. I guess I wasn't in prison with Nelson Mandela. I guess I didn't start the civil rights movement. I guess I never drove an 18-wheeler and my uncle was never eaten by cannibals. You know, all those things are lies that this president says. Netanyahu is not that kind of a leader. Completely different, and yeah. I'm glad that he's fighting for his people.
You mean he didn't grow up in a Puerto Rican church and a black
so.
Church?
I don't think so.
Right, and he had a yeah. bunch of saves. Yeah. I'm surprised Howard Stern didn't get the truth out
right.
of him. It really astounds me. I want to talk more to Governor Kristi Noem. Her book is out today. It's called No Going Back.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yep.
Yes. But you can download it today,
I think you maybe could.
You can place the order, yeah.
yeah.
The truth on – it won't come up until tomorrow. The truth on what's wrong with politics and how we move America forward. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day. Featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Out of the gates and ready to go.
Hey, it's Hutton Withrow. Hot Mike is here on the Outkick Network. We've got your afternoon covered with the latest sports discussion, and it's available wherever you find your audio.
Daily analysis and news. He is hot. I am Mike. Actually, my name is Chad. His name is Jonathan. But you get the picture. We're going to bring it every single day. Whatever you want to call us, we'll respond to. We just want you to respond to what we're dishing out every day.
And while you're here, we hope you're subscribed to the podcast. Like, subscribe, and share.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. Governor Kristi Noem's book's out tomorrow. It's called No Going Back, and the governor's still with us in studio for a few more minutes. Governor, the president just came out and pointed mm-hmm. out that Politico has revealed the act surprise. We've said this, that most of the Biden donors are behind those giving to the protesters, which explains why the president's trying to straddle the line. That's unacceptable.
It's unacceptable. It's a complete political attack against the president, and it's distracting everybody from what's going on down at the border, too. Every time we talk about these protests and what's happening on college campuses, we're ignoring the thousands of people that are entering this country that are dangerous, that are infiltrating our country. And one thing, Brian, that you know, we talk about that. When's the last time you saw somebody covering what's going on down at the border and how many people are coming in illegally? I have the cartels.
We do regularly.
Yeah,
you know
do.
That, yeah.
You do. But, you know, that's the thing is, you know, there's only so much media airtime, and these protests are constantly putting out misinformation.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Governor. For Republicans, they should not be that upset because this is just as bad for Democrats as the border.
Yeah.
And the numbers where Donald Trump is now leading with young people, he's up 7 where he lost by 25. Mm-hmm. Which makes me wonder how the national polls could be so close if he's made so many gains with the Hispanics and the black community and with young people. I guess he still has suburban women to get back.
Yeah, he will. And he'll get them back. He'll, you know, when he gets done being tied up in this court case, he's going to be able to talk about gas prices, grocery prices.
Right.
You know, when you're out there traveling across the country, which I've been in these swing states now for the last several weeks, they're all talking about how much their life has declined.
What have you done for the colleges in South Dakota?
I had a phone call with my board of regents and all of my presidents over a week ago now and told them that this was not going to happen in South Dakota. I wanted to hear their emergency operations plan. I wanted to let them know that I had the National Guard ready. I had my State Highway Patrol ready, that I had my Fusion Center and investigators that would help them monitor social media and be tracking if there was going to be any kind of a protest planned and what kind of violence would be there. So this is what we did in 2020 when the George Floyd protests were going all over the country, and why we were prepared and said we wouldn't stand for it. And I think that kind of communication with these presidents of these colleges and universities from their leaders is that we will not tolerate this.
Well, how do you handle the freedom of speech aspect? Hey, I want to protest. I'm allowed to do it.
But you throw one thing, you throw a water bottle, we are shutting this thing down.
Anti-Semitism?
Yeah, we are shutting this down. You do not get to conduct violence or threats or attack people. That will not take place. And we are going to have peaceful educational universities in our state and allow them. Every student should feel safe when they're on campus, and they do in South Dakota.
Governor, you had a skirmish with the former governor mm-hmm. of South Carolina, mm-hmm. as well as the U.N. ambassador, yes. was a leading contender for, was number two to President Trump. What was that skirmish? Where did it manifest?
You know, I think the first conversations we started to have were in 2020, and she had reached out to me, and we talked again in 2021. Said that she wanted to mentor me, realized I was a new governor, that she had a lot of experience being governor, and that she heard good things, she would tell me, but if she heard bad things, she would make sure that I knew, and said, let me be clear, that if I hear bad things about you, I will make sure that you know.
And she was an ambassador at the time?
Yeah, I think she was maybe in that right. position, but I remember thinking when I hung up the phone, that was a very strange conversation, very aggressive, and I never heard from her again. There was never any outreach, friendly phone calls, no conversations. We crossed each other's paths many times. There was no mentoring. It was very much taken to
me.
What
do you think was behind it?
I think behind it is that Nikki is competitive, and that she was sending me the message very clearly that there was only room for one Republican woman in politics, and that I should remember my place. And I put it in my book because I don't believe in that. I talk about a wolf pack and the fact that I believe that you should have each other's backs, that women should support each other, that you should be willing to be out there and actually mentor people, walk alongside them, and to be their friend, be somebody that you can support. Many times in most of my life, I've lived in a man's world, and that's fine. I'm not a feminist, but I do believe that for women, it is important that other women support them.
And do you think that they have a discrepancy with what year this took place?
Yeah, and that's what I think is interesting. But, you know, Nikki says whatever works for Nikki. That's the deal. Nikki said she wasn't going to run against President Trump, and then she ran against him. So Nikki will say whatever works that day, and the fact that she's criticized my book is exactly what I expected from her.
When you look at the Ted Cruz, the Marco mm-hmm. Rubio, these were brawls. Mm-hmm. Chris Christie is a brawl. Yeah. They were going to be alienated forever.
Yeah,
they were brawls. It was really tough for a while with Ron DeSantis. They got together.
Yeah.
How does the president need Nikki Haley, and does Nikki Haley need the former president to get on the same page?
Every opportunity that Nikki's had in the last many years has been because of Donald Trump. I mean, I think that she could do well to reach out to him.
Well, she did become governor before that.
Yes, but then to become ambassador and get the opportunities that she had and her talking points and what she did was under his administration and his direction. I think it'd be good if she wanted to reach out to him. I don't think he needs her.
Do you think he needs Nikki Haley's voters?
I think he'll get Nikki Haley's voters regardless. I think that most of the people I've talked to that were supporting her are supporting the president, and they don't understand why she hasn't endorsed him. If she's not endorsing President Trump right now, then she's endorsing Joe Biden. And for her people right now, they don't understand that. They are confused by that. Why does she think Joe Biden would make a better president than Donald Trump? And that's what she's saying by sitting on the sidelines right now.
Do you think that you're still strong in the short list on VP?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. All that speculation. What I would say is I want him to win. And I don't care. I want him to pick whoever helps him win. And he knows that. I've told him that many times, that for me, when he's in the White House, I get to be on offense.
Pick up her book, No Going Back, out tomorrow. Governor Kristi Noem, thank you.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He should have been very clear about whose side we're on from the very beginning. But there's a bunch of Democratic donors, major Democratic donors, who are behind the groups that are funding all this. I saw the other day, I think it was in UCLA, There's thousands of dollars of plywood that they were using as barricades against the police. They're committing acts of violence, not just acts of anti-Semitism, acts of violence, of vandalism, threatening people.
And that was Senator Marco Rubio. He was on his game yesterday in a hostile situation, and I don't think they're really ready for him because he knows these issues backwards and forwards, and now he totally gets the former president. He's vice chairman of the Select Committee on Intelligence, Foreign Relations, and Appropriations. He was at Mar-a-Lago over the weekend, a big donors conference. I think some of the seats, I think to get a seat, they said it was $250,000. Now, some seats were $25,000. At one point, I heard from somebody there, President Trump got there and says, well, if anybody's got $1 million, I'll let you speak. And three people put up their hands and spoke. And you know what they said, basically? Donald Trump's going to win. I'm so glad to be here. I'm having such a great time. Nothing of substance. But can you imagine having that much money where you put up your hand and go, okay, for nine words at Mar-a-Lago, not televised, although someone did tape it, I'll get money. So the president walked out $76 million. So he's catching up. I don't think he's ever going to catch up to the Democrats. And I think that's fine. But you got to get close. And the other worry that they have from the Trump camp is too much money on election integrity, not enough money on a ground game. One thing about Ronna McDaniel, she felt like she had a very strong ground game. Right now, we're looking at a couple of things. The court trial, the trial is going on right now. And you know how we have to do readouts, printouts? Evidently, they've came up, they have more complaints about the president violating gag order. And the judge evidently said the violations are a direct attack. He said the $1,000 fines are not working. He's considering jail time. Can you imagine if you put former President Donald Trump in jail on this ongoing trial? Do you believe that? Joining us now is Senator Marco Rubio. Senator, your reaction to what just happened in court?
Well, I think that's what the judge wants to do, is put Trump in jail. Look, what Trump is complaining about is pretty simple. That is that you have a Biden-supporting, documented supporter of Joe Biden as the judge. You have a documented supporter, a rabid liberal, as the district attorney. You have a jury pool selected from the most liberal, one of the most liberal counties in America, where I think Donald Trump got less than 20% of the vote. Multiple of the witnesses that are testifying against him are perjurers, particularly, his former in-house counsel there, Cohen. So these are things the president's going to commit, and he's a political candidate being attacked every day on the news. I mean, this is a political prosecution, right? It's designed not simply to try to damage him every day with leaks from the courtroom, but to tie him down in Manhattan so he can't go out and campaign. So, and then you're going to tell this guy he's not allowed to, you know, you can tell Trump he's not allowed to express himself, and if he does, you're going to continue to fine him, maybe put him in jail. I think that's what this judge wanted to do from the outset. He's just letting him, you know, have ropes to end up doing it. And the media will cheer it. Most in the media will cheer if that were to happen. So
it would be one of the most titanic things to happen over the last 100 years, to put a leading presidential candidate who's leading in all the polls.
Right. I mean, the United States has imposed sanctions on countries that do this kind of thing, that use their court system to harass the opposition candidate. We've imposed sanctions on people for doing this. And so I think people see right through it, you know, and I think the nature of the charges, I don't know if people fully understand what the nature of the charges here are. Basically, this is a bookkeeping allegation that extends into a felony.
Might have dropped off for a second.
Law violation that the federal government itself did not prosecute or convict him of. So it's just an outrageous, you know, collection of factors. And the inability to point this out in a political process that we're involved in, and then to threaten to put him in jail if he continues to speak. I mean, you know, that's the judge gave money to Joe Biden just 3 years ago.
I know.
I mean, that's all we need to know.
I mean, it's absolutely insane. You know what his daughter's doing, working for Adam Schiff as a consultant, as well as other Democratic causes. Talking to Marco Rubio about the breaking news that the Trump said the $1,000 fines violating gag orders are not working. He evidently is considering jail time while the court, he has not made a ruling yet, while the court moves on and they have their first testimony. Evidently, defense is now stepping up and complaining about some of the evidence that's about to be admitted. Obviously, I don't know any more than that. And we'll continue. You know, Senator Rubio and I are not lawyers. So we'll move on. Senator, I don't know if you also know that it looks like the Prime Minister Netanyahu is moving forward on a Rafah invasion. I thought it was absolutely necessary. They're providing a corridor and beginning to escort a lot of the Palestinians out of the way, and they're going to go in. This is hours after the Secretary of State says under no circumstances should the IDF go into Rafah. Your reaction?
Well, this is equivalent to saying to the Russians and the American and allied forces in World War II, stop at the outskirts of Berlin. Don't go in. We know Adolf Hitler's in a bunker. We know that he has a gun in his mouth. We know that, but don't go in after Hitler. Don't go destroy Berlin. Don't go in, because that's what they're basically asking Netanyahu and the Israelis to do. And understand who the opponent is here. This is not some dispute over borderlines, you know, like, well, what's Gaza? What's Israel? You know, how do you divide it? This is a group that basically has their organizational purpose. The reason why Hamas exists, their very reason for existence, is to drive every Jew out of what we know as Israel, to drive them out from the river to the sea, drive them out. They want no Jews in that area and the destruction of the Jewish state. So you are facing an opponent, not only that is committed to your destruction, its very reason for existence is your destruction, who just 6 months ago came across, you know, some broke down some fences and walls and barbed wire, came in on these, you know, the parachutes or whatever, paragliders.
Hang gliders, yeah.
And raped, pillaged, murdered, kidnapped, took hostages. I mean, over, you know, 1,300 people killed. I mean, what how are you supposed to react to this group? And now they're holed up in one small part of Gaza, and it's time to finish them off. That's where their top two leaders are, as an example. And not only do we have the administration saying we won't support you, we have the administration saying we will undermine you if you go do this. I mean, there were reports this morning that Biden is holding back on ammunition, you know, on providing them weaponry and so forth. I mean, this is unprecedented. So, you know, they can talk all they want, but they are basically doing what these campus protesters are demanding, which is that the U.S. not support Israel and going in after this group. And I think it's terrible that Hamas hides behind civilians. You know, they are hiding behind a ring of human shields. And I think this is a terrible thing. But people talk about humanitarian aid. Hamas just mortar bombed and attacked a border crossing where they were allowing humanitarian aid to come in. Where's the condemnation for that? Where's the global outrage over that?
I think it's so important to underline what you just said. They're creating these humanitarian corridors, and Hamas just killed three IDF soldiers who were manning that. So to allow innocents to get out, so they don't mind killing Palestinians and Israelis on humanitarian corridors, which the world is demanding that Israel set up.
Yeah. By the way, this humanitarian aid, and Israel's allowing it in, but this humanitarian aid is not being distributed. It's being sold. Like, people in Gaza have to go and buy humanitarian aid from markets. Why? Because Hamas gets their hands on it, and then they use it to get people to pay them money, whatever money they get or have. So they can raise money for themselves. So Hamas will basically take the humanitarian aid, take the stuff they need for themselves. You think there's any hunger going on Sinwar, any of the other leaders of Hamas? These guys have food. These guys have propane tanks. They have fuel. They have everything they need. And then whatever's left over, they sell it in the marketplace to the population. That's what's happening. And knowing all of this, Israel has still allowed humanitarian aid to come in. And now the humanitarian aid corridor is being bombed by Hamas. So you continue to see, and where are all these people that are out there, you know, tearing their garments, publicly condemning Israel? None of them will speak out against this Hamas. They'll mention it. Oh, we condemn the Hamas thing, but they don't focus any. Where are the protests against Hamas for doing that? They're not happening.
Right. Talking to Senator Marco Rubio. Senator, here's Queen Rania Abdullah, a Palestinian by birth, ripping the U.S. and Israel, cut 20.
People view the U.S. as being party to this war because, you know, Israeli officials say that without a U.S. support, they couldn't launch this war. You know, you turn off the tap and the weapons dry out. So there's been anger in our part of the world, not at just what's happening, mm-hmm. but at the world's reaction. When we see these violations, human rights violations and international law violations, and we're watching the world letting it happen, when October 7th happened, the world rightfully condemned it and took strong action and strong positions. We are outraged that the same is not happening when Palestinians are getting killed.
Your reaction says that we're being roped into it.
Yeah, a couple things. Obviously, look, I don't agree with a word she said. She is of Palestinian descent, no doubt. Jordan is 70-something percent Palestinian. The king is not Palestinian. And the biggest fear they have is a popular uprising inside of Jordan that undermines, threatens, and overthrows the kingdom, and that some, you know, radical jihadis take over. And so I think that internally they're trying to manage that dynamic, and so they speak out as a way to sort of try to manage that dynamic. And unfortunately, in geopolitics, there has to be some flexibility in that regard. But I think it's important for our audience to know where this is coming from at the end of the day, because, I mean, Jordan tomorrow could say we open our borders and any Palestinian refugee that wants to come to Jordan can come. They're not doing that. The Egyptians are not doing that. On the contrary, the Egyptians are saying not a single Palestinian refugee will be allowed into the Sinai across their border. So, but, you know, these governments have their internal politics that they have to manage. So, you know, Jordan is important. We don't want the king to be overthrown. And I think everyone's sort of in on what this is all about and what this means. But obviously, I don't agree with the words she's saying. I mean, there's been, I think it's terrible. I don't know anyone who thinks it's good that these civilians and are dying. But the question is, whose fault is it? Israel's not targeting civilians. Israel's not saying, let's go out and kill as many civilians as we can. On the contrary,
yeah,
Israel has taken more steps to prevent civilian loss of life than the U.S. took in Iraq or Afghanistan. It's one of the reasons why this thing's taken so long. And I think it's good that they've done that. But let's be clear. The reason why these civilians are dying is because Hamas is stationing itself in places where there are civilians, in hospitals, in schools, in civilian. They even put hostages around them to protect themselves, too. So that's why this is happening, and that's what people need to be condemning.
And just keep in mind, we're getting these numbers from the Gazan Health Ministry. That's Hamas. So no one thinks these numbers are accurate. If they say 36,000 dead, 18,000 or 12,000 were Hamas fighters. Nobody agrees with that. So nobody wants one civilian dead, nor do we agree with Hamas's PR arm. I do want to say this. Senator, I don't know if you know this, but after you left Fox News Sunday, Jim Himes, who says, I work with Marco all the time in the Gang of Eight, and I've never seen him so over-caffeinated. So he was challenging a lot of what you said. I want you to hear what he said.
You know, I work very closely with Marco Rubio. We're both on the Gang of Eight. I don't know that I've ever seen him quite as over-caffeinated this morning, but he said that you never asked Democrats on the topic of abortion where they should be. Baloney. Malarkey. Shannon, as you know, prior to the Dobbs decision in the Supreme Court, Democrats and most of America supported the concept of Roe v. Wade, and the concept was that you could have an abortion up to the point of viability, and states could decide, you know, what that was. And so, you know, again, I'm not quite sure if Marco just had too much coffee this morning, but the notion that we're extremists on this topic is just madness.
Your thoughts? I just want to give you a chance to answer.
Well, we don't talk about abortion in the Gang of Eight. We talk about national security. Number two is under Roe v. Wade, we had states in this country where partial birth abortion was not just allowed, it was defended. I think as part of the same interview, Congressman Himes said that there are medically necessary reasons for basically partially delivering a baby from the womb already fully viable, and then shoving scissors into their skull and killing them and sucking out their brain. And when we tried to ban that practice, when Roe v. Wade was still law, Democrats voted against it. They will not tell them to come out and say, at what point should an abortion not be legal? Should it be legal to have abortions? Should there be restrictions on abortions once, for example, the unborn child can feel pain? And you clearly see them sort of fighting against and resisting the tools that are used to basically burn them alive in the womb. What is the point at which abortions should not be allowed? Is it 15 weeks? Is it 21 weeks? Is it 25 weeks? They will never tell you a date. They hide behind this term viability. What he won't tell you is except, and then they'll come up with all these circumstances. So the truth of the matter is that they should say, what's the week? What's the point?
What is viability? I don't know the term. What is viability?
What Roe v. Wade said is you couldn't restrict abortions before the point of viability. It didn't say you couldn't allow them after the point of viability, and there are many states did allow it after the point of viability for all kinds, in some cases, no reasons at all. And when they had a chance to vote against that kind of extreme, law, they voted against it. They're against every restriction, 15 weeks, 21 weeks, every restriction, but they won't ever say that. And they also think, by the way, not only should it be allowed at any time for any reason, but they believe taxpayers should pay for this. And not just pay for this in America, pay for it all over the world.
I hear you. Senator, how would you characterize Mar-a-Lago this weekend?
You know, it wasn't at Mar-a-Lago. It was at the Four Seasons. There was one event at Mar-a-Lago. And it was what the RNC and the DNC does every presidential cycle. They bring in donors. They bring in speakers and others as part of the program because people have something to go to. Obviously, the president's speech was the highlight of it and the center of it. But there were other things going on as well. And it was good. I was very impressed with the new RNC leadership. The new chairman, you know, the Laura Trump is the vice chair or co-chair. They've got a really good plan in place to do two things: turn out the vote and protect the ballot. And very impressed. I mean, they got a lot of work to do. They know that. They're raising money to do that. And so it was good. And it was a good opportunity for our shareholders, meaning the people who are contributing money towards that effort, to get some firsthand insight into how all this is going to work.
Senator Marco Rubio, you're really earning your keep. Thanks so much. It's going to be breaking news. We're going to find out how effective they're going to be. They say it's not a full invasion into Rafah, but they're starting to do incursions. They probably have a lot of intelligence. And we know the hostages are right by Sinwar, the bin Laden of Hamas. So it's going to be tenuous times. Appreciate it, Senator.
Thank you.
Vice Chair of the Select Committee on Intelligence. Knows a lot of stuff. When we come back, we'll be able to take some of your calls. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Trump has a big double-digit advantage on most of the issues that Americans say are most important to them, especially the economy, crime, and the situation at the border. Even on the issue of who will best protect democracy, Biden and Trump are tied. But President Biden has a big double-digit lead over Trump on the issue of character. He is viewed as more honest and trustworthy. And this week, Trump gave voters a lot to consider about both character and respect for democracy.
Jonathan Carl is so off. What he's referring to is the Time magazine story on Donald Trump. Yeah, don't read the synopsis, the summaries in the Time magazine story. Just read. Give yourself 20 minutes. Just read the questions and answers. They list everything. Every question, every answer. And Trump did not hurt himself. In fact, he helped himself. You might not like it, but he plans on rounding up a lot of the illegal immigrants running wild, like the one who killed Lake and Riley and others, and going over, getting them into some type of camp, and going over all their status and finding out who belongs here and when to report and setting them up in dockets that are going to be more acceptable, setting up a brand new system. You know, when it comes to these wars, he's going to immediately meet with officials to try to get some type of resolve in Ukraine. He might not like it, but he's not taking money back. He's going to make sure everyone in NATO pays. He never said he's going to retort. He said, I have trouble defending people that aren't going to pay. Well, the ones that are most threatened are all over 2%, all of them. Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, now Sweden and Norway, they're all over. The ones that aren't are France and England are in over 2%. These are the ones in old Europe. Germany, not over. That's the problem. So a lot of things he's saying that China say won't support NATO, read the story, read his answers.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. If it's like me and most people I know, they're all talking about, even though 6 months to the election, they're talking about the Trump trial, talking about the crazy campuses and what's happening there, where they're sending their kids, where they should have sent their kids, and what has changed so much. You know, what I brought up on One Nation over the weekend, I think, is the most telling stat. In March, they did a campus survey about what issues matter the most. They're trying to figure out what politicians resonate the best and why Trump is winning these 18 to 34-year-olds to 30-year-olds. And it came out. Do you know what the Palestinian-Israeli conflict ranked? 15th out of 16. So how does it become the number one issue? And the number is astounding. The number one issue in 27 states and 52 separate colleges. How does it go from 15 to 1? There's got to be forces behind it. I want to break that down. Also, a special announcement for the show. Great moment. We're doing this for 14 years. One of our great moments for our show. We're welcoming KLIF in Dallas. It's a staple in the community for decades. Dallas, Texas. It's going to launch the Brian Kilmeade Show. It goes on from 9 to 12 noon Central Time. KLF will air at the first 2 hours, and then the last one will be on delay. Same thing they do in St. Louis to great success. KLF is news and information, 570 and 96.3 FM and HD2. Thanks so much, guys. It's going to be a great year. This hour, Mr. Dallas, Will Cain will be joining us and tell us what the people of Dallas care about. That's how much confidence he has in himself. He's Fox and Friends weekend co-host, former ESPN anchor, great guy. He's got the Will Cain show, too. And Michael Goodwin is standing by. And before we get started, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Waiting to find out whether or not Judge Juan Merchan will again find former President Trump in contempt of court for a gag order issues, a potential fine of $4,000. Waiting for that decision from the bench any moment now.
All right, that decision came down. We're just getting the total. But Juan Merchan was outwardly saying the $1,000 fines aren't working. He's considering prison time. Can you imagine if he actually did that? That was Eric Schoen.
Number two.
Trump has a big double-digit advantage on most of the issues that Americans say are most important to them, especially the economy and the situation at the border. Even on the issue of who will best protect democracy, Biden and Trump are tied.
There's much more to say on that, and ABC couldn't be more outraged by their poll, 2024. New polls are in, and while we have 6 months to go, it's close. You'd rather be Trump than Biden. We look at the game plans and the hurdles.
Number one.
These groups are funded by big Biden donors. Should they stop funding these groups?
Everybody, as the president has said, needs to kind of get focused in on the very core principles of what our Constitution allows and what our Constitution protects. And that is this. Everybody has a right to protest, but they have to protest peacefully.
And they weren't. And they aren't. Mitch Landrieu, who's a big surrogate for this administration, he's in charge of handing out the infrastructure money, by the way. Who's running this campus chaos? And finally, a massive push to switch from coddling the protesters to crackdown. We bring you the latest. Over the weekend, you saw the University of Michigan. The University of Michigan had their commencement address interrupted by people dressed up as if they were graduating, but pro-Palestinians, they forged on. And as we welcome in Michael Goodwin, this New York story, Michael, Columbia has canceled their graduation because they don't think they could control it. This just hours before the mayor said we could provide the security. Your thoughts about the capitulation?
Well, good morning, Brian. I think it is just that. It's a surrender. Remember, as a kid, you probably played capture the flag. Well, Columbia has lost its flag. The miscreants, the total abolition of any kind of order, they've stolen Columbia. They've taken it over effectively, and Columbia has surrendered. Look, as I've written about it. I mean, it's my college. I went there. I taught at the journalism school. And it's a shame. It breaks my heart to see this give up, which is really what it is. I mean, it started with steps, right? The negotiating, they break the rules, nothing happens, and you just keep backing up. You just keep backing up. Oh, we're still talking. Meanwhile, they're breaking the rules. And so what does that teach them? I mean, this is supposedly an institution of learning. You've got to teach.
Yes.
And what are they teaching? The uprising provocateurs, they're teaching them that if you keep doing it, we'll keep giving ground to you. And that continued all the way through. I mean, even when they called in the police the first time, they were then sorry about it, the administration. They called them in the second time, and it's successful. But they cannot hold that. They cannot stay with it. And so they've once again given in to the mob. And we know, Brian, throughout history how this ends. It encourages the mob. It gives them confidence. It makes them popular among their peers. And so they go on to victory. And then that is what's happened here. Just think about it. If you step back and look at it, these institutions that have surrendered, what have they gained? They haven't gained peace. I mean, it's appeasement all over. All you do is embolden the bad behavior, and you create more people who see that's the way forward. It's like crime in our streets. People see others committing crimes and not getting locked up. Well, then I'm going to do it myself. Why shouldn't I? I mean, society is maintained only by consequences of bad behavior. Colombia has yielded the field to the worst behavior possible.
And by the way, we're just looking at the Trump trial, too. Got a lot going on. And so far, his COO, his comptroller, is testifying that Donald Trump used a Capital One account and he was very on top of his cash sheets. Okay. And Donald Trump evidently laughed when they said that. So Politico reported the pro-Palestinian protesters are backed by a surprising source. They're surprised. Biden's biggest donors. They go on in their story on Sunday to say the Jewish Voices for Peace and the If Not Now, as well as the Tides Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Foundation, although they deny it. George Soros, obviously, with a few different companies. David Rockefeller Jr. Not only do they donate to these Palestinian groups, these pro-Hamas groups, they also donate to the Victory Fund. You're talking about $303,000 from Soros. You're talking about Rockefeller doing thousands of dollars. So they go through the whole thing, and they realize it's the same donors. Does that explain to you why the president's reaction has been so meek and spineless?
It does suggest that there is a deep connection here between the far left and the corporate funders. The Post has a story today on Goldman Sachs giving to a fund, which then gives. And, you know, it's probably an alien world to most of us. But the world of big philanthropy is such that some of these companies and people and families have so much money to give away. I mean, they are stupendously wealthy.
Right.
And they of course, want the tax advantages of philanthropy, but many of them are also deeply committed to causes. But I suspect what's going on in some of these cases is they have so much money, and they have a staff that vets all of these people who come in the door asking for money. And there are just so many of them, and there's so much money going out the door that I suspect many of them don't really know. Because what you see here, Brian, is kind of a layer cake where, let's say, the Rockefeller Fund gives money to a group, and you mentioned the group Tides. I don't know if they actually give to Tides. But then what does Tides, another group, what does it do with the money? So it could trickle down to two or three different groups that are at far removed from the initial funder, but it's a relatively small amount of money that actually from the Rockefellers, again, just an example, gets to the bottom of these small radical groups that the Rockefellers may not even know about it. It's just trickled down from funder to social activist groups.
Well, number one, you could say that. You could say, okay, you know, I gave to cystic fibrosis and cystic fibrosis gave to someone, or I gave to a fund and they gave it to an unsavory cause. If you are a great company, you know exactly that. And you put the fear of God in them.
I agree.
And you say, if you go give to these, if you give to these political clubs, you're done. So this is the cover of the New York Post, which you write for, Michael, the People Forum. The People Forum evidently is primarily funded by this guy named Neville Roy Singman. He's a socialist who sports every left-wing cause he can, and he is able to get money from Goldman Sachs' charity wing, philanthropist wing, and help support the people that took over Hamilton Hall. They had a meeting of about 100 people. They got him so incensed. They went in there, activated the students and the activists, and they went right through Hamilton Hall. These people, they evidently have known ties not only to Goldman Sachs, but the People's Forum also has ties to China. They got $12 million from Goldman Sachs Philanthropy Fund and the People's Forum, an anti-Israeli group backed by American businessmen who I just mentioned. He supports everything socialist and evidently infiltrated by China. Is there anything that China that's going wrong in our country that does not go back to China in some way, shape, or form?
Well, it certainly benefits China. And so you have to look at it, I think, through the eyes of what's good for China. And this is good for China. And that is precisely the point. I mean, same with Hamas, right? Qatar gives gazillions of dollars to American colleges. Qatar is the home base of Hamas. That's where they go to hang out and spend their money. So I just think there is this flood of cash that's moving through these international pipelines, and that's why sanctions are a useful tool. But unfortunately, back to the point about the Biden overlap, Joe Biden is stuck between these groups and Israel, and we can see that he is choosing these groups. I mean, does it explain why he has been so hands-off of these demonstrations? I think it's one of the elements that is playing a part. I think the biggest one of all is the voters, these young voters whom his party counts on. And look, I think it's unholy, to say the least, Brian. Joe Biden is basically afraid to condemn anti-Semitism unless he also condemns Islamophobia, as though they are equal.
And excuse me, but you know what he's doing, Michael? This is killing him. This is killing him because he's losing the Palestinians, he's losing the radicals, and he's losing traditional Democrats like Josh Shapiro, like Fetterman, who say, of course we support Israel. Of course we should not be putting our foot on their neck at the same time verbally supporting them. Of course we shouldn't be pulling ammo from the IDF at this point. Of course we shouldn't tell them how to fight a war after they were dragged into it because they assassinated people and took them hostage, killed them in cold blood, and then took hostage from 8 months old to 80. So we're trying to do this. So he's alienating the Israeli factor and the anti-Israeli factor. He's doing the impossible.
Well, and look, I think the larger problem for him politically is not whether he keeps these radical anti-Semites in his coalition. It's the disorder that they are creating that spills beyond those who support Israel or not, or are lukewarm or very, or even cold. It's the disorder in the country is always bad. I mean, again, the parallels to 1968 are not perfect. As Mark Twain says, history doesn't repeat, but it often rhymes. And the parallels then were in the Chicago Convention, the disorder in the streets, the chaos, the sense of spreading fear and disorder. That is something that cuts across politics. Nobody likes this. Nobody likes this disorder except the cretins creating it. And that's the thing I think is the big picture here that Biden is missing. He refuses to condemn this sort of thing. I mean, colleges canceling commencement is a very big deal. This does not happen very often, thankfully. And yet it's going to happen a lot of times in this semester. And we're seeing it. You mentioned Columbia today, Michigan. The Michigan graduation was disrupted by these pro-Hamas protesters. I mean, it's going to go on just about everywhere, USC, UCLA, coast to coast. These big, prominent colleges are having a problem with graduation. The people who paid for their kids to go to college are thinking, we are now the victims of this. So Joe Biden is creating new classes of victims by letting this continue.
I hear you. Again, we just said the news is the president's on trial right now. The testimony's ongoing. Now he's got the controller on there. The other news is Columbia says we're canceling our commencement. They're cowards. They would have had the NYPD there, but there's a big push not to have them there. I look for NYU. I look for the new school. I look for Parsons School of Design and FIT to do the same thing. Hopefully they have more guts to do it. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
All right, we come up. When we come back, I want to get your calls, 1-866-408-7669. And then we'll have Will Cain in the second half of the hour. We're following all the breaking news as it happens only here in the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Senator, I talk to Democrats in this state, all across the country, and they say they are really worried about President Biden's prospects for re-election.
It's going to be a close election. It was close in 2020. President won Arizona by 10,000 votes. My election in 2020 and 2022 were close elections as well. I mean, statewide races here tend to be close. We're a purple state. It's a battleground state. It's also it's going to be a state that could decide who has the majority in the United States Senate.
And that is Senator Mark Kelly, who was on Meet the Press over the weekend. And he was, you know, you guys got such a great resume. The guy's on the FISA space shuttle. He set an endurance record in space. And then he was a fighter pilot in the Iraq War. So he was able to talk about how you handle Gaza. He's able to talk about what's going on with drones and what's happening with our military. I had such hope for him that he was going to be more like Joe Manchin than Joe Biden. And instead, you know, he gave a pretty good interview yesterday, but he said, I told Netanyahu he's got to do a better job in the bombing in Gaza, which makes me think that's a pure political statement, because people say that if you look at Gaza, it's more dense than any city in Afghanistan or Iraq. That's Fallujah, that's Ramadi. And when people are critical of us, our allies, they would just be statements. Can you imagine our allies saying, well, I'm in NATO, but I'm going to pull out of Afghanistan because I heard you killed some civilians, or Quran was left in the wrong place. You got it from your enemies, but you didn't get it from your allies. What we're doing with Israel is going after an ally who depends on us for so much, who are great fighters, who are a fantastic fighting force, who provides a lot of intelligence for us. And I just hate the way they're being treated right now. Just because the world is exercised against their existence, it doesn't mean we should change our alliance. When we come back, Will Kane tells me what it's like to be successful in Dallas, what the people of Dallas like, now that we're on KLIF.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we're back. As I mentioned earlier, you know, after 14 years, we're finally making some gains in Texas, and seeing some great cities. And now we're lucky enough to be on in Dallas beginning today, May 6th, KLIF. And even though every station matters in every city, it gives us a great idea what's happening locally, because we get a chance to find out what's happening in that city for the people that live there. And one person that lives there is Will Kane, and he's here to give his exact address. You could go right by his house. He's Fox and Friends Weekend co-host, host of the Will Kane Show, the podcast. It's all as well as over the air. Will, thanks so much for joining me on Dallas Day.
Welcome to Big D, Brian.
What do I need to know, Will? What do I need to know to thrive in Dallas? What do the people of Dallas care about?
Well, today they care about the Dallas Stars. Just won Game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoff against the Vegas Knights. That was the big news of yesterday, Brian. But, you know, Dallas is a – I'll tell you this. I grew up in a small town an hour away from Dallas, and I never really wanted to live in Dallas. It was like the big, fancy city with, you know, keeping up with the Joneses affairs. But I've lived in Dallas now for 3 years, and – I've never been more pleased. It's a really, really awesome city. I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to say it's, you know, safe, because every big city in America is suffering from some type of Democratic mayor and effect on prosecutors and so forth. But it's clean, it's nice, it's well organized, and it's incredibly popular. I'll tell you that, because it's full of non-Texans right now.
You know, when I went there, I interviewed Deion Sanders before. Yeah, well, he became a coach again. And I think it was when he discovered religion and was coming back as a minister. And I went there, and I was talking to some people, and I go, oh, do you buy a house? I go, you know, how much? He's like, no, they're building it. And I said to him, wow, you're building a house? He goes, everybody does. It's very rare when you're buying someone else's house. I don't know if that was an oversimplification, but it's expanding so quickly. It's affordable to buy a new house prior to this just jack up in rates of late.
So again, grew up an hour outside of Dallas to the north. I used to drive to Dallas for whatever, Cowboys games, airport. And the county that's north of Dallas is Collin County. And that's where Dion built his house in a small town called Prosper. And we used to drive past it. It was pretty much a country road. And Dion's house, massive. I mean, it stuck out like a sore thumb in the middle of the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But now, Brian, that entire area, Frisco, Prosper, Collin County, it's like, it'd be like Orange County to LA. It's its own thing with its, you know, Toyota,
yeah,
Frito-Lay, Pepsi, everything is up there. And it's just, it's, I think it's the biggest, I don't know if it's the biggest, but it's one of the biggest boom areas in America.
So as we look at what's going on in Texas, the Texas is not immune from these college campuses and the unrest there. Again, University of Texas Austin, another push to make an encampment. In come the cops again. A lot of people think Texas is different, but especially in Austin, they really have, yeah, they still have the same problems that we're having here in Columbia.
And UT is gigantic. I mean, it's 60,000 kids, you know, and I mean, I have buddies that have sent their kids down to UT. I have Jewish friends who've sent their kids down to UT. And I mean, he's blowing up my text all the time with pictures of stuff that's going on down there. It's, I mean, yeah, I'm disappointed that that's happening at Texas. I mean, even more disappointing is, you know, what happened in Michigan over the weekend with graduation.
Oh.
And then I guess Columbia taking its lesson from that and saying, well, I guess we're going to cancel graduation. So this loud radical minority gets to dictate the life experience of everyone else.
So we're talking with Will Cain. Now that we're on in Dallas, you want to get a sense of what's going on. But I need some of those issues, our national issues. First off, from what you know, the short list does not contain Governor Abbott. Does that surprise you for Donald Trump, who seems to have really hit it off with Governor Abbott? And he's been so strong on the border.
No, it doesn't surprise me. So when I look at Trump's VP list, Brian, I'm going to tell you the guy that sticks out to me. It's former North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. And the reason why is because some people listening right now are probably going, who? Why? I don't think you need a strong flavor underneath Donald Trump. You know, like if you're running that campaign out, I don't want anybody that – and this is talking about electability, right? I don't need anybody that brings a negative – any potential negative. That's why Kristi Noem's dead in the water, right? I mean, you don't need any of that stuff. You need somebody who has competency, and Burgum does. He's run successful businesses in a successful booming state. And he doesn't have, like, these obvious negatives that come along with him for attack. It'll be about Donald Trump. So why take on any extra water that you might need? And Abbott, for one, because he is conservative in Texas, you'd have to ask, how does that play, I don't know, in Pennsylvania, you know, a state that I can win if I'm Donald Trump? I'm not insulting Doug Burgum by saying a nothing, but I just need competency. How about that? I just need competency standing next to me.
And a couple of things, too. They hit off, and I think it comes down to how you defend the president, because Trump says some things that are unorthodox, to say the least. And when you go up there and every single anchor outside Fox, Will, brings every interview about Trump to January 6th as if it happened yesterday.
Right.
So if you don't effectively toe the line, you can't, you know, J.D. Vance went over there and basically said January 6th was no big deal. He wasn't there. Everybody who was there thinks it's a big deal, but we don't think it's a top 10 issue on any American's mind right now because everything else is on fire. If you could fight like Marco Rubio can fight, that's one thing about Rubio. He understands the issue and he understands Trump. And he knows how to fight.
Yeah. I guess Rubio would check some of the same boxes, I guess. Like, he's not super controversial. Actually, when you say fight, yeah, push back. Don't be soft, but don't be controversial in your own right. It's what I think the calculus has to be. You know, don't bring your own controversy to the table. And, yeah, Rubio probably doesn't do that either. I don't know, man. I'm just feeling like it's Burgum. I don't know why. I think it's Burgum.
Well, I'll tell you what. I interviewed him today, and I interviewed him last week, too, on the radio. And I know I think he's down at the trial. He's at Mar-a-Lago. And I remember catching up into him in New Hampshire, and him and his wife are sitting there, and I'm thinking to myself, wow. He said, yeah, I spent last night on Donald Trump's plane. I said, what stands out? He goes, everyone's working. There's no drinking. There's no eating. Everyone's got a job. He says, I've been flying all over the country on Trump's plane. I go, how do you guys get along? I go, you seem so opposite. He goes, that's the thing. We're not. When you talk about business and energy and things, we hit it off. And I tell him my issues, and it helps. And he tells me his issues, and I got, you know, an opinion. So I thought, wow, there's something here. Something else happened yesterday, Will, and I don't know why Tom Brady did it, but he sat down for a roast. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I didn't watch the roast because I was watching the Stars game seven. But
I don't blame you.
I've seen clips. It's you saying, I don't know why he did it. It's, from what I've seen, it's something else.
So here is Jeff Ross. This was on Netflix. I guess it's for charity. Jeff Ross talking about Deflategate. Cut 44.
If you work hard, eat right, film the other team's practices, deflate the balls, and have the NFL make new rules just for you, then you too can be the third most famous guy in a Dunkin' Donuts commercial.
That's pretty good. Do you agree? We just lost? Oh, we got him back.
I'm here, Brian. Oh. Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Hey, I saw somebody saying this humanizes Tom Brady, humanizes Robert Kraft, humanizes Bill Belichick. I couldn't believe it when Brady, by the way, said all you had to do is give me $20 million, right? and I would have said I did it. Laughing at yourself, hey, laughing at yourself is one of the most humanizing things that you can do. Don't take what you do seriously. Don't take yourself seriously. So, you know, we say, I don't know why Tom Brady did it. Maybe he comes out a winner, you know? In the end, laugh at yourself.
Here is Bill Belichick last night. Cut 46.
Great seeing you again. This is a big night. The fans want you. Everyone wants you. But it's not your night. Sorry, Drew. Brady.
Yeah, coach.
You're in. Let's go.
Let's go. Are you kidding me? Again?
That's pretty funny. Drew Bledsoe was the star. He ended up starting for the Cowboys after that.
He did.
Right.
Yeah, he did. Everybody's in on it, man. Randy Moss was up there. They got Bledsoe to play along, which, by the way, that's not an easy moment in Bledsoe's life. So for him to even laugh at it the same way, I mean, he didn't just lose his job. That's kind of the end for Bledsoe. I mean, he had, like you said, the little dance with the Cowboys. But
I'm going to play one more. I'm going to play one more for you. Kevin Hart hosted. Cut 45.
You and Bill are so so far apart from each other. I just feel like, why do y'all take a shot together, man? Let's make the uncomfortable uncomfortable. Pour Bill a shot.
This is a big moment, Bill. I want to say this is the greatest coach in the history of the game that did what no one else has done. And having Tom Brady and him was the greatest honor the good Lord gave me. So, cheers.
A black man made that happen.
So Kevin Hart brought them together. Kraft just fired him.
Did Belichick drink the shot? I couldn't see if he ever drank the shot.
My Netflix experts will not confirm or deny he took the shot. But I think this is my opinion, Will, and I think you're going to agree with me. Belichick's going to go. He's going to thrive in the media. He's going to be on. Enough. People expect so little of him because he's not Barkley. He's not Mr. Personality. He's going to have so much fun. He's not going to want to go back to coaching, even if the opportunity's there. My prediction, well, everyone's going to be talking about how good Belichick is. Am I wrong?
So I watched him at the NFL draft, and he was really good. And here's what he's good at. So last week, Brian, on the Will Cain Show, which, like you said, you can subscribe to at Apple or Spotify. I had this guy on Nerdrotic, okay? Who's Nerdrotic? He's this, like, huge gaming or rather pop culture reviewer on YouTube. And he said, authenticity is king. That's what people want in media. They just want you to be real. And I can testify that Brian Kilmeade is the same dude you see on Fox and Friends on this radio
Sadly. As
he is off camera. But people want something that feels real. Barkley is Barkley because he's being 100% himself. Belichick is being that. Like you said, he's not trying to be Mr. Entertaining. He's kind of sitting there. He's the straight man to everyone else's joke on set. He did Pat McAfee's draft coverage. And he's really smart, obviously, really insightful. I don't know if I agree with you that he won't go back to coaching. Watch Dallas, by the way, next year. But I think you're right. He's going to be really good because he's going to be authentic. He's going to be himself.
I got a couple of things on that. I think it's going to be good, too. And I think that people have said to me, if you get to know Belichick, like I have not had the chance to, he's a really good guy. You know, but I watched him on Dynasty, that series. He came off kind of cold at the end, and I thought that maybe he might have lost the locker room a little bit. That's my feeling, but I guess it happens to everyone. Belichick could go a few places. The one thing about Cowboy fans you don't understand. I know your threshold is like the Yankees. If you don't win it all, it's a wasted season. But it really shouldn't be. Because I'm with the Giants, and they either go to the Super Bowl, and then they fall apart the next year for the next 5 years. They give you a taste of winning 1 year, and they're back down to 6 wins. And there's no thought that they're going to do much better than 500 this year. At least you guys can guarantee you they're going to be contending for a playoff spot and have a shot at the Super Bowl. You can't underscore how important that is.
Well, Brian, do you go through life complacent to be good, or do you take the moonshot to be great? You gotta. The point isn't to go 12-5 for three straight seasons. The point is to win the whole damn thing. And I do feel entitled like a Yankee fan. I grew up in the 90s. I do feel entitled. We need to win it all. 12-5 and out ain't gonna cut it in Dallas.
We'll see. And by the way, just so we get it on the record, there's another scenario for Belichick. If Dable implodes this year, they're going to fire him. I don't think they're going to bring him back, especially because he's so volatile. It'd probably be all in or all out. And then if you, the Giants and Belichick have a love affair, the Giants might just go, Bill, you got 5 years to straighten this thing out. Do it. What do you think?
I didn't know we were doing this Brian Kilmeade sports show today, which I love, by the way. I think that you better have a quarterback. I think he's learned his lesson.
Yeah.
You better have a quarterback.
Right.
Look at his last couple of years in New England. You don't have that in New York.
Get Garoppolo back. He only gets hurt every other snap. All right.
There you go.
So, Will, my final advice before I go. We're on KLIF now in Dallas. You live in Dallas. The final thing that's going to keep me there for another 10 years, 15 years, 25 years.
This market, I'll tell you, even you talking sports, I'm going to tell you something about the media in this market. I do not think it reflects the sentiment or the mentality of the people that live in North Texas. If you can be you, which you will be authentic, and you give us an actual voice of reason that reflect the values of the people in Texas, even though you're a Long Islander, I know you can. Even if you can do that, man, you will be not just fitting in here. People will be starving to hear someone that actually reflects their values.
And Will, this is Allison, and Brian being Brian, he unplugged his headset and didn't hear any of what you just said.
Well, I heard most of it.
I thought my call dropped again. I was like, oh, no.
I
heard
so,
Brian
Will,
say, oh, my God.
This is the first time that's ever happened, right? Ever happened.
You just didn't want to hear the beautiful compliment Will was giving you.
Did he give me a compliment?
I
have to listen to the show back. All right. Eric,
well,
did you
have
a heart attack?
I have to give you a compliment. I have to give you a compliment after on Fox and Friends I accused you of being the mascot in high school. and I like to give you a little bit of a hard time, Brian.
Right. I noticed that. Yeah. I also noticed now that you had your podcast, you don't fill in during the week, so that hurts my feelings. So we got to get you back. So, Will, thanks for the advice. Thanks for being on day one in Dallas. Best of luck with the podcast. It's killing it. I see the ads everywhere. The Will Cain Show, wherever you get your podcast. Will Cain, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian. Good luck in Dallas.
Thanks. Back in a moment.
But you won't be forgotten. You'll always be remembered as Eli Manning's bitch.
The fastest growing talk show in America. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's hard for me to watch people roast you, but I think enough of my family members have helped defend former football players. So I'm just here tonight to support you and celebrate you. Retirement isn't easy. It can be a lot like a bad breakup. So I'll give you the same advice that I give all my exes. Good luck knowing the best is behind you. Congratulations, Tom. Cheers, everyone, to Tom Brady.
All right. Kim Kardashian made the trip, and of course she was referring to her dad supporting O.J. Simpson. Just a quick note, what's happening in the Trump trial, witness, the COO, says that even though Michael Cohen's is an attorney, his invoice approval was not sent to the legal department despite being a legal expense. So these are just little things coming out of the trial. They're trying to say that he tried to obstruct an election by paying off somebody because they had negative information on him, regardless whether it's business or something salacious. It doesn't matter. The question is, this is something that if it was proven even true, normally it'd be get a fine. I mean, they were using legal expenses to a law firm in order to unleash that whole dossier that allowed the whole Russia investigation to go through the Donald Trump's first 2.5 years of his presidency. They did it through the Hillary Clinton campaign, and they got fined $450,000. That's it. And they fought the fine. So that's not something that should have been done. You shouldn't really attack your opponent since with trumped up investigations. Pretty sure that's not ethical or legal. I'll keep you up to date on what's happening in the trial. Keep up to date what's happening in Rafah and Israel and all things breaking the 2016 campaign. Keep it here. Brian Kilmeade Show.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action now. This hour, we're going to be joined by Congressman David Gustoff, Ways and Means Committee and Chairman of the House Knesset Parliamentary Friendship Group. It looks as though Senator Schumer might be joining with Speaker Johnson in order to bring Benjamin Netanyahu here. Think about that for a second. Must show that it's got some blowback for asking for his ouster. We're following two stories right now. It looks like the Israelis are ushering out some civilians out of the Palestinian, getting a humanitarian pathway. Looks like they're going to start going into Rafah. And well, we're finding the latest on the Trump trial and looking at all these encampments. How soon till George Washington University says, enough, we're going to move in? Before we get the governor of New Hampshire, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Waiting to find out whether or not Judge Juan Merchan will again find former President Trump in contempt of court for a gag order issues, a potential fine of $4,000. Waiting for that decision from the bench any moment now.
Well, they did find him in contempt. We're trying to get the number on actually how much he was fined. We'll bring you the latest. His comptroller is on the stand right now.
Number two.
Trump has a big double-digit advantage on most of the issues that Americans say are most important to them, especially the economy and the situation at the border. Even on the issue of who will best protect democracy, Biden and Trump are tied.
2024, new polls are in. While we have 6 months to go, it's close. And it's all the battleground states, but you'd rather be Trump than Biden. We look at the game plans and the hurdles.
Number one.
These groups are funded by big Biden donors. Should they stop funding these groups?
Everybody, as the president has said, needs to kind of get focused in on the very core principles of what our Constitution allows and what our Constitution protects. And that is this. Everybody has a right to protest, but they have to protest peacefully.
Right. Enough. Mitch Landrieu, you didn't answer the question. The Biden funders are the ones primarily behind this unrest, funding the groups that are causing so much unrest in these college campuses, many on the outskirts of not even students, but just creating havoc for the Palestinian Hamas cause. That is nuts. Also, a special thank you to KLIF. They begin carrying our show beginning today, May 6th, starting with today, all 3 hours. So it's going to be great. They are the news and information station over in Dallas, 570 and 96.3 FM. Let's bring in Governor Chris Sununu, the 82nd governor of New Hampshire. Governor, you were one person I don't think was surprised that most of the donors to the Biden Victory Fund also donating on some level to these groups causing so much unrest in campuses around the country.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And I think we have to be aggressive about going a step further and saying, okay, it's one thing to say Biden donors. I want names. Let's name the organizations. Let's name the individuals. Let's be very clear that these guys are putting money behind folks that are legitimately, promoting terrorist organizations like Hamas. I mean, the thing that got me last week was it isn't just, hey, we just want peaceful protest to have a message against, what Israel's doing. There are folks out there now saying, hey, Hamas is just a bunch of freedom fighters. Why are we so hard on those guys? They are terrorist organizations. They want the death of every Jew. They want to attack America. And if there are Americans funding that promotion, then absolutely we should have those names. Nothing works like good old-fashioned public humiliation of folks that are just on the wrong side of this issue.
Well, David Rockefeller's one, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they said they stopped. If not now, Jewish Voices of Peace. So the George Soros, as I mentioned, the Pritzkers, related to the governor of Illinois, Susan yep. Pritzker, as well as Nicholas Pritzker. You're talking about thousands of tens of thousands of dollars Now, Katie Britt came out and tweeted out after seeing this. He goes, a completely unsurprising source. Jim Banks says, surprising to who? We also know that there's a major organization funding the Columbia unrest, who is from fundamentally funded by China. So they're supported by China. Everything that seems to be going wrong in our country, somehow China seems to be involved. Do we begin to get to start this trend?
That trend started about 20 years ago, and a lot of people wanted to bury their heads in the sand on it, but it's real, and that's what we know. I mean, then you add the AI, the cybersecurity issues that are all related to this as well, right? I mean, it's all about hacking. It's all about propaganda. It's about infiltration on social media. The biggest reason this crisis has blown up, I believe, is because there isn't quality education in the classroom on this. There isn't enough constructive ways of having this discussion. And so what happens? The students say, well, if I'm not going to learn about it, I guess, you know, social media becomes their educator, if you will, and the propaganda, because that's effectively filling a vacuum because the universities have proactively failed at quality education. Congratulations, everyone. You spend $100,000 a year to send your kids to Columbia to not get an education, and instead they're sitting there scrolling on social media getting propaganda, you know, their heads filled with propaganda by really evil organizations. This isn't a policy dispute. This is no policy dispute here. These folks want to eradicate every Jew on the planet. They want a second Holocaust. That isn't a policy. That's evil. And unfortunately, and by the way, I'm going to go a little farther and say the parents have to take some responsibility. I'm a parent of college-age kids. Let's take some responsibility here. Are we what values are we instilling in our kids? So when they go on these campuses, do they have the maturity and the discipline to handle good conversation, quality conversation, as opposed to and understand the civics of what's happening, as opposed to just getting riled up by a mob?
In one of my my daughter's classes, she's in college. She had one political class. She's an education major. And they actually rolled in a clip of me. They didn't even put the two together. But she laughed. Like you could not. I mean, my kids, I don't think they are unique in this way. Well, my friends, because either you can go out there, they're not going to listen to some professor that say, what do I need to get an A on this test? But they're not going to be molded by them like Plato. I want to bring you to another area of your expertise, and that's politics. I'm going to look at the polls. All adults, ABC does a poll. All adults, Trump beats Biden 46-44. Registered, Biden by one nationally. With the third party, Trump beats Biden by two. RFK has 12%. On issues that matter, Trump plus 17 on immigration, Trump plus 14 on economy, plus 8 on crime. They're even on democracy, which must kill them. Biden wins plus 5 on health care and on abortion plus 12. What do these numbers mean to you? What would you be focusing on if you were in the Trump campaign?
So a couple things. One of the things I've been trying to focus on is all these folks, specifically in the liberal media, who won't look at those numbers, who aren't looking at what's really happening to Americans on the ground. They say, well, character matters, and Biden has better character than Trump, so shouldn't that mean Biden's winning by 70? Well, look, you and the rich liberal establishment who have no concept of how inflation is crushing families might think that. But start respecting the fact that American families are getting crushed by inflation. The border is real. And to the point you're bringing up, Brian, those are their priorities. Everyone might have a different sense of priority. Stop judging folks on their priorities. I think what the Trump campaign is doing is exactly what they should be doing. I mean, it really couldn't be going any better for them from a political standpoint. They've completely made these court cases reality TV. And I've said this publicly. I'll say it again. No one's being kept awake. I don't like the fact that Trump's in court. I don't like any of the chaos of it. But no one in America is really being kept up by it. No one's losing sleep over that. You know what they lose sleep over? Not paying their bills, not paying their rent, not being able to afford groceries for their kids anymore. Seeing what's happening on the border, international issues and terrorism, that really keeps them awake at night. And that's what's going to drive them in November. And I think the Trump campaign has done a very good job of kind of almost flipping the script on liberal media and saying, hey, this is what you guys wanted to focus on. And it's just become reality TV. Real issues matter to real people, and voters matter. And if you all are threatened by democracy, if you're worried about the threats to democracy, stop telling people not to vote. I'm hearing that now, too. Oh, if you don't like Biden, just don't go vote. There's nothing more un-American than telling someone not to vote at all. It's a rare thing on this planet to be able to choose your leaders. Don't complain about democracy being eroded and then not participate in democracy. So being sure that everybody goes out there and votes, and that's what the Democrats are most afraid of, that people will go vote. Because when voters turn out, it means they want change, it means their issues are real, and they're going to vote on what's happening. The last thing I'll say, man, I tell people to be selfish. Every American should be selfish with their vote. You should vote exactly in the interest of your family, in the interest of your business, in the interest of what the candidate you think is going to make your path bigger, better, and brighter. And that's it. And don't judge people for doing that. And when folks do that, Trump's winning. Trump's winning this battle right now.
All right, we're talking to Governor Sununu. You recognize his voice. He's always passionate. Governor, I want you to hear, we just had Kristi Noem in here, and she talks about in her book a battle she had with Governor Nikki Haley, who became Ambassador Nikki Haley. Listen.
You know, I think the first conversations we started to have were in 2020, and she had reached out to me, and we talked again in 2021, said that she wanted to mentor me, realized I was a new governor, that she had a lot of experience being governor, and that if she heard good things, she would tell me, but if she heard bad things, she would make sure that I knew, and said, let me be clear. If I hear bad things about you, I will make sure that you know. And I never heard from her again. She was sending me the message very clearly that there was only room for one Republican woman in politics, and that I should remember my place. But, you know, Nikki says whatever works for Nikki. That's the deal.
Where do you stand in this? You going to get involved?
I'm not getting in between those two. I'll tell you that. I don't know what happened in that conversation. When people write, let me tell you, Brian, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write my own book. And you know what it's going to be called? Never Buy a Book from a Politician by Governor Chris Sununu, because it's all a bunch of bull. I mean, I don't know what really happened in that conversation. It's a bunch of salacious stuff. And I'm not criticizing Christie's book per se, but all of them have these salacious conversations in the inside stuff, and so you never know really what to believe. So I'll leave that between those two. I don't know. I was going to make a joke about you know I love Nikki's dog, and because Nikki has this really cute dog, and apparently Christie's dog isn't with us anymore. But
yes,
okay.
You heard about the dog story. That's so interesting.
Who didn't hear about the dog story, Mike? Look, if anybody's thinking about running for office, I have a piece of advice: hold a puppy, love a puppy, just put it in your commercial. You get so many people jumping across typical party lines when you love a puppy. No one tends to jump across party lines because you shot one.
And you're not against what happened to Old Yeller, because Old Yeller had lost it, was going to die, right? So, like, you didn't come out against Old Yeller.
I was not anti-Old Yeller, although I don't know if Old Yeller was a true story. So I guess, you know, I forgot about that about 6 minutes after
Alice,
I saw the movie.
Could you find out if Old Yeller really happened? Could you find that fantastic? I almost had you to comment on that.
Why aren't people giving enough? Where are the goat people out there? Didn't the goat get shot too?
Right.
I mean, don't we care about the goats? Where's their advocacy group?
So you found a lane. You found
there
a lane.
You
found, and the lane is the goat lane.
I'm the goat guy. Sununu's the goat guy. I'm pro-goat.
You're the goat. All right. So I want you to hear. So President Trump gives this expansive interview to Time Magazine. One thing he wants to do is he wants to round up illegal aliens and check their status and ship them out if they don't belong. That they say that's a bad idea, according to Maria Teresa Kumar on Meet the Press for young Latino voters. Listen, cut 32.
So the only reason that Arizona became a purple state was because Sheriff Arpaio going after Arizonans' families who happen to be Latino. And since then, for the last 13 years, there's been base building. Mark Kelly should not be senator had it not been for the influx of young Latinos becoming eligible voters. And guess what? There's 163,000 Latino youth waiting in the wings who were not eligible in the last election who are now eligible. Mm-hmm. And if you want to see how you talk about voter registration, the majority of voter registration is going to start happening over the summer. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they are paying attention and they're hearing that they want to do massive deportations internally, that gets everybody on edge.
I wanted to hear your – I have an opinion on that, obviously, but I want to get yours. What do you think about her assessment and assumption?
I don't think it does get everybody on edge. I mean, if it did, then Trump would be losing Latino voters. He's not. Latino voters are coming over to the Republican side for a variety of different reasons, right? Not just because of those issues. They're going to vote like everyone else votes on what's happening, you know, within their family structure, what's happening within their finances, all that sort of thing. So if there was any truth to that, then I think you'd see it in the polls. But just the opposite is happening is my sense.
Right. I think he's going to do it. And I hear 51% of the country want it. And the other thing is, if you came here legally, paid the money, worked your way up society, very proud of your work ethic, what you accomplished, and you see these people just blitzing the border, getting through, living off the land, getting their debit cards, it ticks them off. I speak in generalities. I'm like, it's not going to tick people off to get people out here who are breaking the system.
And it doesn't just tick Latinos that have come over the right way. It ticks off all of our immigrant population who have come over, got their green cards, done it the right way, worked hard, spent sometimes years in the system, and doing it right. So it upsets everybody. And guess what? We are a nation of immigrants. We are. And so everyone who has done it the right way goes, wait a minute, man, this is a real problem. And it's not just what's happening. I try to remind the Biden administration of this all the time. It's not just what's happening. It's the fact that you're gaslighting everybody, telling them for years it wasn't a problem, that there was no crisis. What you're seeing isn't real. Oh, it's very real. And now they're backtracking on that. So it's not just the issue. It's that you lied. And the same thing with inflation. If the Biden administration had come out early on and said, hey, guys, this inflation thing is going to be bad. It's going to be bad for a couple of years. We spent too much money. We borrowed too much, whatever it was. And they kind of owned it, and they prepared people, and they were upfront with that conversation. I think he'd have a very different – people would have a different, very different image. But every time something goes wrong, they gaslight the American people and say, oh, those bills you can't pay, but you're really doing better. You just don't understand your own situation.
Governor,
it's
insulting.
So insulting.
What about the campus unrest? We only have 30 seconds left, but Dartmouth, I understand, did it right.
Dartmouth and UNH did it right. Look, prevention and planning is everything. We were on the phone with the president of Dartmouth and UNH. They talked to their local law enforcement. They made the rules really clear to the students. As soon as the rules were broken, arrests were made. But guess what? Not a single window was broken, and every kid was back in class. Not a single class was missed. So you take action. You be firm. You hold everybody accountable to the rules that you laid ahead of time, and it works. And hats off to the president of Dartmouth and UNH. They did a phenomenal job with that. And guess what? Anything else that might come, again, people know they're not going to get off. It's not going to be a wishy-washy thing like you see in Columbia and California. Right. Those states are messes because everyone's refusing to address the issue, and it actually throws gasoline on their own fire.
And I will not defend my state. You win. Governor Chris Sununu, thanks so much.
Thanks, brother. Be good.
All right, go the goat lane. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Obviously, they're concerned. This is a close race. This poll, like most others, shows it neck and neck. Little lead for Trump. So how do they hope to get out of this situation into something better? And I think their simple answer would be they need this race to become a referendum on Donald Trump. They need to remind people what Donald Trump was like as president.
That's David Ignatius, friend of the show. He's got a book out, and he says, remind people what Donald Trump is like. This is when I sat there and looked at the television. I go, yes, they know. They don't need you to tell them. They don't need me to tell them. Everyone in their house with their friends, their softball team, their school, they got to make their own decisions because we remember, even though we all have ADD as a country, we're all on our iPhones, we don't need to really go to a meditation to remember what it was like from 2016 to 2020. They have totally different philosophies, totally different approaches to foreign policy, totally different approaches to the border, totally different approaches to the economy, to tax cuts and incentives and regulation rejection, and how to handle protests, too. Protests around the country. Remember, this president was in for cracking down on them. This one wants everyone to lay out. And he takes the lead, like it or not. We don't see President Biden taking the lead anywhere.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The president, though, has said the protests aren't making him change his policy. He is unequivocally pro-Israel. It was a month ago he said something had to change or U.S. policy would. Do you expect any change in U.S. policy as a result?
I do, and I slightly disagree. I think the protests and the larger movement have had the president change. I mean, you look at the president now talking about some of the consequences that could have on Netanyahu, the Erez Canal, the Erez opening open. The United States didn't veto the ceasefire resolution in the United Nations after three attempts.
Unbelievable. He's happy about this. I'm beside myself by this. We also have, he didn't know it at the time, that's Ro Khanna, Democrat surrogate for President Biden, but he did not know they have cut off ammo deliveries to the IDF in protest of the fact that they're moving ahead on Rafah, I guess, or some of their operate or the style of their operations. Congressman David Kostoff, Ways and Means Committee member, chairman of the House Knesset Parliamentary Friendship Group, and one of two Republicans serving in the House who is Jewish. Congressman Ro Khanna thinks it's a good thing that this administration is equivocating. Do you?
No, Brian, look, President Biden just appears weak and feckless. I watched his remarks last Thursday, and in one sentence, he mentioned the word anti-Semitism, but in the same sentence talked about Islamophobia, discrimination against Arab Americans. The entire focus on his speech should have been to condemn the anti-Semitism that's happening on these college campuses. And he failed to do that. He equivocated, and you know, for whatever reason, he's trying to play to all different sides. I guess he's concerned about the vote totals that he's seen in Michigan and other states where he got there were a lot of undecided votes. You know, the fact of the matter is that there are times like these right now that American people look to the president for leadership and if you will, amplify their voice. And he didn't do anything to make any college Jewish college student in this country feel any safer, any more secure about their place on the campus. And he had a great chance to speak to the nation and to the rest of the world, and he completely blew it.
There's no question. And the thing is, every Democrat's all over the place. Every Republican is not. I really don't know. Outside maybe Rand Paul saying something unorthodox. Almost everybody says Israel is attacked. Any civilian that's killed, it's Hamas's fault. And they are the ones who build a subterranean life that protects them and built their headquarters and schools and hospitals and playgrounds. So you want, after the horrific attack, they have to go in. They're going in. Sadly, some innocent people are dying. Not nearly as much has been reported by Hamas. But I want you to hear Bernie Sanders, a Jewish member of the Senate. Cut 34.
Well, I am thinking back, and other people are making this reference, that this may be Biden's Vietnam. I worry very much that President Biden is putting himself in a position where he has alienated not just young people, but a lot of the Democratic base in terms of his views on Israel and this war.
So what would you do? Do you really believe the Democratic base is against Israel? Is that true?
You know, I look at the House of Representatives, which is an example of people around the nation, 435 members, and I don't have any qualms with there are a number of Jewish Democrats last week that stood very firm condemning anti-Semitism, but at the same time there were I think 70 something Democrats that voted no on an anti-Semitism resolution, and it tells you that they're playing to this very small, I don't even know if it's part of their base, but they're playing to a small part of these malcontents around the nation, some of whom I don't even think they know what they're protesting against. The fact of the matter is that the leader of this nation should he's got a duty to make sure that every American is safe and is safe from harm. And you look at these students around the country, they've been on your show on Fox and on radio. They've testified before various committees in the House of Representatives. Brian, they don't feel safe on their campuses, and they don't feel safe on their campuses for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, you've got these protests, but two, you have very weak leadership leading some of these colleges and universities. And I look at Columbia, where the undergraduate Jewish population is a little over 20%. How many of those Jewish students do you think are going to re-enroll in some of these colleges and universities
right.
in the next few years? I think it's a giant reset for these universities, and they've caused themselves irreparable harm, not only in terms of those who would choose to apply to go to school there, but donors. I mean, look at Columbia with Robert Kraft, and he says, big donor, I'm not going to give to school anymore.
How about Columbia gets $1.2 billion from the government? Yale gets $776 million. Harvard gets $754 million. I have no idea why you're writing them checks unless they're doing studies, and they might be. They might be doing some studies for the government, but these are huge checks. You have to put them in jeopardy. Why does the HBSC, why do historical black colleges have to come back for funding every year up until Trump got involved? But these guys don't, and they obviously are doing things that are putting the Jewish members of their of their student body in danger. They're embarrassing the university. Even if you believe in the cause, that's not how you do it. You saw UCLA, for goodness sakes, the anti-Semitic phrases that were on the wall. So why is that? Why is their money not in jeopardy?
Well, to your point, we're looking at it now. I mean, we heard last week the Speaker of the House, Majority Leader Steve Scalise, Virginia Fox, who's the chairman of the House Education Committee, talking about looking at federal funding that goes to these schools and look at withholding the funding based on how these universities are led and what they permit to go on their campuses. If you look at any other race, religion, creed, what have you, and they were attacked on these campuses the way Jewish students have been, you would hear a giant revolt from those in the Democratic Party and those in the leadership. So you will see Congress start looking at funding, and I think it's rightfully so. And we need to get these university presidents back at the House of Representatives again
right.
to try to explain or justify whatever they're doing and what they're not doing.
Well, absolutely. By the way, George Washington University, just a stone's throw from Washington, D.C. And by the way, we're talking to Congressman David Kustoff of Tennessee. Just a stone's throw away, they have defiled the George Washington statues. They put up a Palestinian flag in his hand. They put Palestinian garb over his face and other locations across the campus. And it's allowed to stand with the D.C. police right there. George Washington University says none of this is acceptable. What are they, hostage to their own students?
Yeah, so to your point, George Washington University has asked the city of Washington for support to try to clear their campus and try to restore their campus. The mayor has refused to do so. I know that she'll be testifying before the House of Representatives soon. And these very tough questions are going to be asked because the university is asking for that help from the city of Washington.
We also have a situation where the University of – you saw where the commencement address was canceled at Columbia. It was been canceled already at USC, and now we saw that interrupted by the University of Michigan. Are you concerned about your institutions in Tennessee? Isn't it graduation time for you?
Yeah, well, in fact, there was some type of a protest at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. They took care of it. But, look, I think that every college and every university, whether wherever they are, they have to be prepared and on guard. And it may not – again, it may not be their students. It probably isn't because we know who funds these groups, and these people are – a number of them are paid instigators and paid protesters. So I think everybody – unfortunately, has to be on notice, and it's truly a shame because obviously I'm stating the obvious, but graduation is a time to celebrate these students and all that they've accomplished, and you know the fact of the matter is this is I don't know when it ends on the college campuses, but it's something that the Democrats are going to have to deal with at their national convention, and in a way, Brian. This where we are right now feels a lot like not only the late 1930s, but 1968 all rolled up into one.
Especially with their Chicago. It's going to be the Chicago DNC. So that's going to be a just they are chanting genocide, Joe. They're not even bringing up Trump or you or any Republican. And meanwhile, the speaker went down there, was heckled, but he showed up anyway, met with the president. As far as we know, President Biden hasn't even picked up the phone. In Virginia, they tried something in the University of Virginia over the weekend. The Virginia Attorney General, Jason Mayeris, spoke out about it. Here's how they handled it. Cut 10.
We're receiving intelligence that outside agitators are starting to get involved in these campus protests. We saw that they are showing up with pallets of prefab wooden barriers. We saw this at VCU. We've seen folks that are not students show up in riot gear with bullhorns to direct the protesters on how to flank our officers. We even see them taking water bottles, pouring half of it out, putting bear spray in the water bottles and throwing them at these officers, basically using them as chemical agents to try to assault our officers. And so our message is, if you think you can get away with assault and battery of an officer, if you think you can get away with threats of violence and acts of violence against those in law enforcement, I got to tell you, you're going to find out real quickly. Virginia is not New York or California, and we're going to hold you accountable.
And that seems to be the way you say Tennessee will react, right?
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And that shows the right leadership.
Yeah.
In Virginia. But look, I think every college and every university, you're now on notice. And again, it may not be your students. It probably isn't. There'll be people from outside. These are professionals. We've seen some of these type people at the Capitol march through here and demonstrate and try to get people on video saying things and trying to get them instigated. Look, the fact of the matter is every student, no matter who they are, has a right to feel safe where they go to the college and university, and that's not the case. And the federal government, the executive branch, needs to step up. The president has been slow to the plate, and when he had the chance, he took the chance on Thursday, he completely blew it.
Congressman, how do you explain, you're Jewish, how do you explain that seems this next generation doesn't seem much symbiosis with Israel, and how much are you talking about that in the Jewish community?
Well, I don't know about that. I think that on October the 6th, the number of Jewish Americans may have been liberal or progressive, and they woke up the next morning thinking differently. I mean, they look at, you talked about this earlier, the world changed on October the 7th. There was a ceasefire on October the 7th until Hamas completely violated it and killed 1,200 Jewish people, the highest number of Jewish people killed on any given single day since the Holocaust almost 80 years ago. So I think the people do see things differently. They look at leadership. They look at the fact that Joe Biden is not leading, is not standing strong for Israel. You look at Schumer, who called out Netanyahu on the Senate floor and said he doesn't need to leave. You know, they talk about election interference. We don't want foreign leaders to say our president, our majority leader, and our speaker and our leaders need to be ousted. They don't do that, and it's not right for Schumer to do that. So right. To your point, I think the Jewish Americans look at the lack of leadership from Biden and what people like Schumer say, who proclaims himself the highest Jewish person elected, and they're not standing strong.
They're not standing strong, but it's up to the other people, despite your leadership, to stand up for your religion and a country that's such an ally to America, I think. Yeah, so I know you guys are pretty much on the same page. My exit question to you is this. Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to put that motion to vacate out. Are there other Republicans that will join her outside Tom Massie?
I don't know. Procedurally, what will happen is when she calls the motion to vacate, there will be a motion to table, and that motion to table will be successful. So it'll die a death this week if she tries to schedule it for a vote. But the fact of the matter is, we've got our quarterback, and I don't know any team that sacks their own quarterback. So we've got our leader, Mike Johnson. Is doing a good job under very difficult circumstances with very thin margins, and we need to make sure that he continues to enact our Republican conservative agenda.
All right, Congressman, best of luck to these perilous times. David Kustoff, thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, listen, your time to speak out. 1-866-408-7669. A lot going on over the weekend. We'll discuss it. We'll also have the latest on the Trump trial. I'll update you. The latest on the Rafah maneuver for the Israeli military. We'll go over that. And by the way, Donald Trump just made his way back into court after the lunch break. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I ain't worried about 5-0. That is not my business. My business is Alexis Vanessa Roberts, okay? She ain't talking about no free this, free that, because I tell you what ain't free, Columbia. Shit. Do y'all know that they got the nerve to want $68,000 a year?
I mean, look, we totally respect their right to protest, but, I mean, we're also making sacrifices for our kids.
Yeah, I'm out here busting my hump to pay all that tuition.
What do you do for a living?
Sister girl, I do it all. Uber all day. Uber Eats all night. Cut grass on the weekends. Sell Gucci wallets out my trunk. Life coaching on IG. I bounty hunt whenever possible. All of that just so she can say she got a degree in African American studies. It's like, little girl, you've been black your whole life. You know what it is.
So that was, that's Kenan. Kenan Thompson.
Yeah. Anyway, we know who he is.
So Kenan from it was a cold open. You just talked about the protest with some gender neutral host. I don't know who these people are in SNL. They're just not funny. I thought I'm going to go to the Weekend Update. We'll find something. Nothing was funny about Weekend Update.
There were some funny things, not that we'd play on the show, but there. But the cold open, they have these basically two white parents saying the protest freedom of speech were so torn. And then Kenan is the black dad. And he's like, it's fine if your kids are protesting. My daughter's in her dorm and studying because we're paying for that degree.
Right. It's just fantastic. It was really good. That part would made a lot of sense. I think he's the only thing. He's the longest. He's been on there more than any other comedian or actor. So that's pretty important. The other big story over the weekend was Tom Cotton. And Tom Cotton took on Jonathan Karl, who clearly did not know where he was going and who he was dealing with. Here's Tom Cotton. We're not going to have time for it?
No time. Three hours went so fast.
Tomorrow I'm going to bring it up because he calls them little Gazans, and Jonathan Karl goes to bat for him, and he says, who do they think they are? And cut him down to size. Jonathan Karl only wants to talk about December, talk about January 6th. That's all they want to talk about. Same thing with Jake Tapper, January 6th. The rest of the country gets it, but that's not even in the top 15 things that are important. Soon they'll realize that.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.